This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer, reporting from the Great River Road in Wisconsin. Come along and join me for an exploration of Prairie du Chien in the southwest, and then up the Mississippi to the hip university town of La Crosse. Stephanie Klett is Wisconsin's Cabinet Secretary for Tourism, and she shares her passion for the region. And then Robert Moses, President of the Prairie du Chien Area Chamber of Commerce, talks about the city's history and year-round outdoor attractions. Mary Elise Antoine is a Wisconsin historian and author based in Prairie du Chien, and she talks about the life during the frontier days and the U.S. Army's Fort Crawford that was established on the heels of the War of 1812. And then we'll visit with A.J. Frells, Executive Director of La Crosse County Convention and Visitors Bureau. Frells talks about the vibrant growth of the university town and its independently owned retail shops, diners, brew pubs, and the trendy Charmant Hotel, ranked number 2 in America in TripAdvisor's Traveler's Choice Awards 2017. Maria Norberg is the owner of Grounded Patio Cafe and Specialty Coffee Shop in downtown La Crosse. Maria shares her life journey from university student to business owner, and how she and her millennial friends are reinventing the city's business community. She talks about the affordability factor in town, where many young people are able to purchase homes and businesses. Last but not least, we'll stop in at the Genoa National Fish Hatchery for a visit with project leader Doug Aloisi. We're here with Stephanie Klett.
We are thrilled that you are in southwest Wisconsin in the city of Prairie du Chien, which is one of the oldest communities in the entire state. You are in an area rich in history, and not just because of the Mississippi River, but in this area, Abraham Lincoln was actually in the U.S. Army chasing Chief Black Hawk. So very rich history in this region.
Going way back. When was it first settled? The French were here, right?
The French were here. Yeah. But one of the things you're going to experience is the Dousman House and Villa Louie. And that was one of Wisconsin's first millionaires who made friends with the French, who discovered this area first and then came in, and the rest is history. Southeast Wisconsin is where I first met you, in Lake Geneva and Lake Michigan.
So there we were.
Yes.
On Lake Geneva. And now here we are in another water world. Very distinctive.
It is. And on the southeast side, Lake Michigan is so gorgeous. And, of course, Lake Geneva is a whole 50 minutes from Lake Michigan. But with the Mississippi River, you're absolutely going to love it. It is a blast from the past. You're going to feel like Mark Twain is speaking directly to your soul.
How can you not think of the Mississippi without thinking Mark Twain and being on the river? Tell us about how individual people, tourists, will not can spend time on the water. I heard that you were driving a riverboat of sorts on the river.
I was. One of the things you can do is rent a houseboat, and I did that, and nobody told me how much work it would be.
They let you actually drive it, right?
Yes, they did. I highly recommend getting a captain, but nobody told me how much effort it takes. You know, I thought I was going to get on that houseboat, put it on cruise control, and enjoy the ride. But one, the Mississippi is a tricky river.
It's moving.
It's
whether you want to move or not.
Exactly, yes. And, you know, with boat anchors and how you have to bring it in.
So you're probably used to, like, the lake where you thought, well, you can just stop here and do a do-over.
Exactly. Yeah. Throw the tube in the water and just kind of drift along. The Mississippi River, it is scary, and it's beautiful.
But it's so much fun.
It really is.
Everybody I talk to, you mentioned tubing or boating, and they big smile about the Mississippi. Locals.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, and when you mentioned tubing, I think one of the first times you were in this region of the state was to tube the Apple River.
That's right, 300 years ago.
Yeah. The Apple River is one of the best places, I think, in the Midwest to go tubing. And you just put that tube in and float down the river for a few hours. So we're in southwest Wisconsin now, but the Great River Road, the Wisconsin portion, actually goes through 33 communities. You're starting in southwest Wisconsin today, but over the next 4 days, you're going to be hitting up to northwest Wisconsin. And you're going to find that during that drive, the experience is very different community to community. And small town America is at its finest.
And that's where I want to go next, and that's why I'm here. How refreshing, how wonderful to experience that real essence of the old Americana, you know, that small town that still is thriving. And tell us how they work together, have people know they're there.
Well, you know, I think regional tourism is so big. And so the Great River Road goes through many different counties and many different communities. So they've been really good at, I don't even like to use the word marketing because it's such a special place, you know, and that makes it sound commercial.
They do a lot of cooperative stuff to kind of build momentum and get the word out.
They do. And what's really interesting is a lot of folks have never heard of the Great River Road. Our number three international visitor here in Wisconsin comes from Japan. And they love this area because, of course, Pepin is home to Laura Ingalls Wilder, and they love the Little House on the Prairie books. So this is a big international hub.
Interesting. Having grown up across the river on the Minnesota side.
Yes, which is gorgeous, by the way.
Exactly. Gorgeous. But this entire region is stunningly beautiful.
It is. You know I'm biased to Wisconsin.
Slightly.
And how beautiful it is. But I tell you, the Great River Road, the unglaciated area of Wisconsin. It's hilly and bluffs and gorgeous. You see trains going by all the time in the Mississippi. You just feel like you're in a different era. You're the writer and the speaker of this group. It's hard for me to describe that feeling of what you'll get when you're here.
You've been to the towns a lot and immersed yourself there. What is most memorable in your mind? Places to stay, the people, the events,
yes,
and the festivals.
Okay, that's a loaded question because every place has its own special flavor. But I am so excited for you to go to Little Stockholm on the Great River Road.
That's the name of the town?
Stockholm, yep, after Stockholm, Sweden. But Stockholm is population 66. You are going to love it. They do a dog days festival and bring your dog. But there's a place called the Stockholm Pie Company that has won so many awards across the country. I am telling you, once you have their coconut cream pie or their lemon pie, you will dream about it. You will crave it. Stockholm Pie Company in Wisconsin was actually voted Minnesota's favorite pie place.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah, because it's so close to the border.
Border jumpers.
Yes, exactly. So you will love it because it's an old general store, and these pies are done by hand with love. And Stockholm is a great one-day trip. So there's really just about four blocks of things to do, but you'll be stunned because you'll get there at 9 in the morning and 5 in the afternoon. You're like, wait, it's population 66 and I'm not done yet? That's one of my recommendations for you.
The River Road is a destination in itself.
It
and
is.
Is there a guidebook that people would get?
Oh, absolutely.
So they would know where to go and what to do,
yes,
along the whole journey.
Absolutely. You can always go to travelwisconsin.com, and we have information not just on the Great River Road, but all of Wisconsin. That's your best resource. And don't think you have to do all 250 miles in one sitting. A lot of people break it up, and they say, okay, I'm going to do Prairie du Chien to La Crosse today, because that's about a one-hour drive. Just taking the time to make the right stops, you know, seeing the Villa Louie, a state historic site, home to Wisconsin's first millionaire, seeing Fort Crawford Museum and how they operated during the Civil War. Have mercy, you do not even want to see the instruments they used. And then experiencing Wyalusing State Park, where the confluence of the Wisconsin and Mississippi River meet. And I'm telling you, when you got on that bluff and see where those waters meet, it's magic. And then getting to La Crosse, which is a very modern city, and yet there's that Mississippi appeal that brings you back. But if you're a foodie, the Great River Road is a place for you.
La Crosse is a university town, too.
It is. It's got three colleges there, La Crosse University, Viterbo, and a technical college as well.
So kind of like Ann Arbor, it gives us this infusion of young energy and vibrancy.
It does, and it's really transformed over the last couple decades. But there's a spot there I'd love for you to check out. It's called Granddad Bluff. You can look into three states, so you'll see your home state of Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa. But it's a bluff above the bluffs. And, you know, whether it's New Year's Eve, they'll shoot off fireworks, or the 4th of July. And, of course, when you see them mirrored in the Mississippi River, it's just a beautiful sight.
I'll be there.
All right, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Stephanie Klett, only because you have work to do, I have to let you go.
Oh, no. No, we haven't even gotten to the upper portion of the Great River Road.
I know, but our buses are waiting.
All right. Well, Tom, always a pleasure.
I'm so glad this worked out. I was hoping you'd be in this part of the state.
We're thrilled to have you, and remember, eat some catfish.
I will. For the listener, for further information, website again.
Go to travelwisconsin.com, and we've got all your info for the Wisconsin portion of the Great River Road.
Welcome to Prairie du Chien. My name is Robert Moses. I'm president and CEO of the Prairie du Chien Area Chamber of Commerce.
Tell us about what the name of the town means and its French history.
Prairie du Chien was actually established on June 17th of 1673. It was established by Marquette and Joliet, who actually came down the Wisconsin River. And they decided to actually stop here as part of their fur trading efforts. And that's how Prairie du Chien was actually established as a fur trading center for this area. Prairie du Chien is the second oldest community in the state of Wisconsin. We are actually named after Chief Perry of the Dog, and because of that gentleman, that's how we became Prairie du Chien.
And so here you are today, still thriving.
Way back in the 1600s, this was where commerce actually took place, right here on St. Ferrel Island with the Mississippi. And then we also added the rail, and it really brought thousands of people to this part of the United States.
So today, what's here? What's the population? What happens here? Why does somebody come here, a visitor?
Prairie du Chien today, our population is about 8,000 people. We are very lucky because we actually have history as well as the Mississippi River.
And we have a history tour going on right behind
yes,
us.
Yes, we do. We had several people actually going through the Villa Louis, which was actually founded by the Dousman family, and they were the first family that established their roots right here on Prairie du Chien.
In their mansion here, we're sitting out in the front veranda. When was it built?
The villa was actually built in the early 1900s.
So here it is today in mint condition, basically. Pretty rare to have a mansion like this.
We really have thousands of people actually travel to Prairie du Chien to take a tour of the Villa Louis. What's unique about the villa is 90% of all the original furnishings in the villa are original, and that, I think, really makes it unique.
It really does, and it makes you have this palpable sense that the family just stepped out back.
That is so true, and actually the villa is actually located right on the Mississippi River, so when you have the backdrop of the Mississippi with a beautiful 25-acre mansion, it's quite impressive.
Tell us a little bit more about the town itself. Why would somebody come here? What would they do?
We have events going on 12 months out of the year. What I like about Prairie du Chien most of all, it's reconnecting the past with the present.
Give us an example of one of the more fun events that you guys put on.
There's something called the Carriage Classic, and the Carriage Classic is always put on right here on the grounds of the villa. That is always the second weekend in September. It is a horse and buggy competition. People are dressed in period costumes. They bring children. They also have picnic lunches on the lawn.
How many people show up for that event?
About 5,000 people attend that event each year.
Tell us about one of the cool events you might pull off in the middle of the winter.
Prairie du Chien has hosted an ice fishery, and this year will be our 69th annual ice fishery. We actually have a lake called Greenmore Lake. It's located just 3 miles from the villa, and we kick it off on a Friday evening, and it runs all weekend, and it's just nice to see the returning people coming back year after year after year.
A lot of ice shanties out there?
Yes, yeah. Yes, there are. Yes, yeah.
So for further information, website?
Our website is prairiedechien.org. And my name is Robert Moses, and I am the president and CEO of the Prairie du Chien Area Chamber of Commerce.
Thanks, Robert.
My name is Mary Elise Antoine. You are in Prairie du Chien, and the first people who came here to settle were French-speaking people, either from Quebec or else from the Illinois country. They came here because of the fur trade. The trade of manufactured goods with the native peoples for skins and pelts. The fur trade was the main economy up here, and that's what brought people to the region. And so settlement started here, and it's a perfect place because you're at the confluence of the Wisconsin and Mississippi rivers, and the Mississippi River to the north opened up northern Wisconsin, Minnesota, even part of Canada and Missouri to the fur trade.
And we're overlooking the Mississippi.
Right. We're on a high point. 200 years ago, you could have looked right down to some of the backwaters of the Mississippi River.
And that was its geographic importance, right? Its location.
Yeah, location.
Because rivers were the highways of the day.
Very much important because of its location. Today it's a small community.
How many people live here?
About 6,000 people, not only in the city, but in the surrounding area, too.
And what drives the economy? What keeps it going?
Our main economy in Prairie du Chien is tourism. Some of it is for people who are interested in the early history, the fur trade history, the military history, people who want to be on the Mississippi River. There are a lot of seasonal properties in this area. It's a great place to fish, boat, because if you go up and down the river, it's just beautiful with all the bluffs. Between tourism and the fishing economy, that is it, mainly it. 3M has a plant here, as does Cabela's has a very large facility here. That's about it.
That's enough. Tell me more about you, and you're a historian. How do you manifest that in your world here?
Okay, I was born and raised in Prairie du Chien. Just loved history growing up with my grandma. Went to work for one of the Wisconsin historic sites here in Prairie du Chien, the Villa Louis. Then continued in college with history and then went on to a master's degree in history.
Did you do a master's thesis? What did you specialize in?
My thesis was what was called a thesis project. I worked on all the original papers from the Singer Sewing Machine Company.
Oh, wow. Fascinating. Isaac Singer.
Isaac Singer, right. And
isn't that an amazing story in itself?
Oh, very much so.
Think about it. The Singer Sewing Machine transformed not only the country, but in many respects, the world.
Oh, all of a sudden you could produce so many things faster, right? So I've always worked in the history museum field. For a while in upstate New York, I was there for 14 years, and then I came back to Prairie du Chien, and I do private research, consultancies. I'm president of the Prairie du Chien Historical Society. I've had several books published, and so...
Talk to us about your books. What were they about?
Well, two of the books are very photograph-oriented, so there's a history of Prairie du Chien. The other book is called The War of 1812 in Wisconsin, The Battle for Prairie du Chien. Most people don't realize that the War of 1812 came all the way out here to the upper Mississippi, and there was a battle fought at Prairie du Chien, so it's about that.
And Zachary Taylor was here in the region, right?
Zachary Taylor was supposed to come up here in 1814, and then he got called home, and then he came back later as the commandant of the American fort, Fort Crawford.
Interesting. Okay, another book that you worked on.
Well, another one is called Frenchtown Chronicles. There was an older gentleman who grew up with his grandparents on both sides, and of course in the evening they would tell each other stories. And he always remembered all of these stories and then wrote them down. I and another woman gathered all of his stories. We edited them, and it's been published. It's called Frenchtown Chronicles, all about Prairie du Chien and growing up here.
Through that primary source material that you read and look at, is it like Twilight Zone for you? Is there some time travel because you're hearing their voices and hearing what they thought and saw?
It is. I really enjoy working with the primary sources because so much of history is, well, you know. Now I'm getting back to the real people who really did and said things.
And if you think about it, history and historians, it's the most inexact science of all because it's all, like you said, he said, she said.
Right.
Yeah, but so when you can get to that, what they said and wrote down, that's so cool.
That's what's really nice. And so I like the stories. I also like learning a lot about how they lived, what their houses were like, what they had inside their houses, what they did in their daily living. Not so much the important men and the important events, but the ordinary people.
What is your favorite story? Most funny or fascinating or symbolic of Prairie du Chien and its history? You know, what story would you first tell?
Ooh.
Anecdote.
That is a very difficult one. You know, one of the stories that is in Frenchtown Chronicles really alludes back to a very important thing that happened in this area, but nobody realizes it, and it's the end of the passenger pigeons. Wow. Yeah, the passenger pigeon used to be a very, very dominant bird here. Early records talk about how they used to come in huge flocks, and people would throw nets up and catch them and have them as a meal. But once people started farming, the pigeons became a real problem, because as they broadcast the seeds, the pigeons would be right...
Thank you very much.
Yeah, right behind them saying, thanks for supper. And so... The story goes that the passenger pigeons here in Prairie du Chien were affecting the people so much that they went to the priest. They said, we've got to say prayers to get rid of these pigeons. And so they did a novena, which is a certain number of days worth of prayers. And at the end of the novena, that was the end of the passenger pigeons. There were no more.
Wow, the power of prayer again.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But in reality, they are extinct.
Interesting.
They were systematically killed off because they were such a pest to the agriculture. Yeah.
Interesting. One more story. One more.
Well, we can have a love story.
Oh, there you go.
All right. Love story. Here at the Second Fort Crawford, Zachary Taylor was the commandant. And with him, when he was in the military, his family usually traveled with him. So he had his wife and his children. And one of his children was his daughter, Sarah Knox. And so Zachary Taylor and his family were here at Prairie du Chien at Fort Crawford, and young lieutenant came along by the name of Jefferson Davis. And Jefferson Davis was pretty much just right out of West Point Military Academy, and Sarah and Jefferson Davis fell in love. Well, Zachary Taylor wasn't too happy about this, not because of Jefferson Davis himself, but because he didn't want another daughter to marry into the military. His oldest daughter already had married a post-surgeon, and he knew what a hard life was, and he wanted something else. So he would send Jefferson Davis off up north to run the lumber yard, or across the river to run the lime kilns, just anything to keep him away from his daughter. Well, the argument was that he was military, and so Jefferson Davis resigned his commission, went to work on his brother's plantation. Sarah traveled to visit her aunt, and Jefferson Davis came up to visit Sarah's aunt, and they were married. They didn't stay married very long because both of them got tremendously ill, and a few months after they were married, Sarah Knox died. Yeah, and then Jefferson Davis went on to marry another young woman by the name of Rina.
Very fascinating. For further information, is there a portal, a web portal for history?
Yes, there is a website. It's maintained here at the Fort Crawford Museum, and it's fortcrawfordmuseum.com. My name is Mary Elise Antoine.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you very much.
My name is A.J. Frells, Executive Director of Explore La Crosse.
Here we are in the heart of downtown.
We have a beautiful downtown area, one of the most historic and active, vibrant downtowns you'll find in the entire state.
And you're right on the Mississippi, right?
We are. We're sitting right on the Mississippi. We got the wheel boats or the paddle boats, as you say, come in. We just had three of them here 2 days ago. We actually have several rivers that converge together here. It's what we call the Driftless area throughout La Crosse County and beyond.
Driftless meaning what?
Driftless is the glaciers, when they went through,
right.
Did not touch this area. So it left us with these gorgeous bluffs and waterways that we have. So we actually have waterway trails that you can kayak and canoe and get back into and kind of disappear, if you will. But U.S. Fish and Wildlife has worked with us, and they've actually put up trails and signs so you can find your way back out as well.
For the outdoors person, La Crosse, summer months, fall, way cool place to come.
It's a fantastic place, and it really is one of our calling cards is the outdoor activities, hiking, biking, kayaking, fishing, canoeing. Without a doubt, it's one of the premier spots to come for the Midwest if you're an outdoor enthusiast. And speaking of that, biking, road bikes, mountain bikes, we have some of the best elevation in the area, so we have people that come here to train as well.
I've never been here before, but I've known many younger kids go to university here. So I've known La Crosse as a college town, a university town, which by deductive reasoning, like Ann Arbor, gives it that vibrancy and that cutting-edge, trendy element, right?
Exactly. We've got University of Wisconsin at La Crosse. And then we have Viterbo University as well as Western Technical College.
How many students total, roughly?
I was just going to say, UWL, University of Wisconsin La Crosse, has over 10,000 students enrolled alone. Viterbo is about 3,000. So you're right. It gives that youthful feel to town. It gives that vibrant feel. The universities bring in great performances and the sporting activities. So, yeah, you have that aspect as well, which you know as well as I do. Those university towns always kind of have that feel to them.
Yeah, they do.
And the universities are great for us to work with as a convention and visitors bureau, sporting events, NCAA events, as well as high school track and field championship and so forth. So they're a great partner for us to work with. And the performing arts aspect of it. We also have the Weber Center, Performing Arts Center. So great partners, great relationships, make great things happen.
And here we are kind of in the heart of downtown, and it reminds me of Madison as far as the culinary scene and the nightlife. It's what time is it now, like 6:30? This place is rocking. Where are we, and why is this place so packed?
We're on the roof of the Charmont Hotel. Charmont opened a little over 2 years ago. Believe it or not, in La Crosse, TripAdvisor ran a contest, if you will, or voting by their patrons, and they wanted to see what the best hotels were in the nation. Charmont was voted number two in the nation behind a property up in Nantucket.
So based on what criteria?
Just on service, quality of food, the whole aspect. So it's a beautiful little boutique hotel.
This was last year, yeah.
But we have so many other properties. We have such a great variety. We've got the Radisson, the Hampton Inn, the Holiday Inn. The Charmont's a boutique hotel, though. You know, it lends itself to a different market that we didn't have before. And, you know, about 3 years ago, we saw a huge growth in downtown La Crosse, and they literally just about doubled the amount of sleeping rooms they had downtown.
Okay, let's go wintertime now. January, February, different world, but it's still rocking and rolling. Tell us life here in the middle of the winter.
We've got Mount La Crosse for skiing. A lot of people travel up from Chicago over Minneapolis, St. Paul area to ski here. Those trails that we talked about are great for snowshoeing.
And you have cross country.
Cross country. When winter rolls around, there's a lot to do. And again, we continue on with the arts and the performances that are happening.
Okay, if I came here and we had tomorrow together and we could go cruise around doing anything, what would we do?
We would get you out on the La Crosse Queen, so on the paddle boat that we have, the station right here, the banks at Riverside Park. We have Irish Fest in this weekend.
Nice. We went right by it.
Yep. So, I mean, there's all kinds of festivals. I tell you, I've worked this type of job at several different places. I came here from the south shore of Lake Tahoe, down just about 20 minutes off the south shore of Lake Tahoe. I have not lived or worked anywhere that has more festivals than La Crosse County. I mean, between the five different communities and everything else, it's incredible. You and I would go up to the Granddad Bluff. We'd go up to Granddad Bluff and check it out. And
that's a real dramatic overlook.
It's beautiful.
Right?
So you can see it right from the rooftop here with the flag. You can see three states from that area. It's very dramatic. It's beautiful. And then we'd spend some time downtown checking out the shops. We'd hit Onalaska, Holman, West Salem, and we'd head into Campbell.
These are little towns surrounding.
These are the other communities. We support tourism for all of La Crosse County.
You guys work in partnership then?
We do. With all those communities. Yeah, we're countywide. And then we'd hit the downtown zone, and we have, in this county, we have over 100 eateries that are locally owned. So you get a true flair feel for that regional flair. We have so many wonderful locally owned restaurants, stores, and pubs and so forth. So, yeah, you can spend the day just having a good time.
And is there an iconic La Crosse brew, you know, a local?
Well, we have several craft beers, Turtle Stack, Pearl Street. We have a bunch of them, Two Beagles up in Onalaska. Matter of fact, we're doing a show coming up soon that's going to highlight all the craft beers we have in the area.
Somebody wants to learn more about coming and exploring La Crosse, I know you've got to have a one-stop shop for that.
Yep, we are the one-stop shop. You want to learn about us, go to explorelacrosse.com. My name is A.J. Frels, Executive Director of Explore La Crosse.
A.J., thanks for sharing. This has been great.
Maria Norberg is the owner of Grounded Patio Cafe and Specialty Coffee Shop in downtown La Crosse.
Maria, you have a real grounded life. You're from Wisconsin.
I am, yes. I love Wisconsin.
And here you are in La Crosse, and you probably never thought you would be when you were a kid.
Oh, no. I guess it's, you know, I had a lot of hopes and dreams, and you just never know where you're going to end up. But for me, it was always important to have community. And so lacrosse has been just a wonderful fit.
So you grew up in a small farming town.
Yes.
Was there 24 in your graduating class?
21.
Oh,
yes.
21. Sorry, I overstated.
I know. Hard to beat that.
Yeah. So this was coming to the big city for you.
Yes. And at first I really thought it was scary.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet it would be a little intimidating.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. You know, one-way streets. My hometown didn't even have a stoplight. You know, you come here and you hear trains and it was incredible, but I, you know, quickly got into the groove. Yeah.
And it kind of seduced you in a way, didn't it?
Absolutely.
You fell in love with Lacrosse.
I do. I really love this town. Yes.
So here you are, you're a student, and now you're a business owner. How did that transition come about?
I don't know. Some days I wake up and I wonder the same thing. But no, it's the people. I've been so fortunate. You know, I've worked hard. I won't, you know, shy away on that. But, you know, I was able to meet the right people and be exposed to just wonderful opportunities. And when they came, it just was one of those things I didn't think twice about it. Absolutely.
It probably was a little scary making that leap to signing on the dotted line that you now own a business.
Yep, absolutely.
And you're like a mother now because you have employees.
Oh, yes. And that's a completely different challenge that, you know, college doesn't really prepare you for until you got to experience it to really be prepared to manage people.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about Lacrosse. It's a very dynamic, interesting urban center that you, it's palpable where you can feel this renaissance. There's some ghetto areas. There's some places that are run down, and they're right next door to this place running up major renovations.
Yes. It's interesting because I've owned this business for 7 years, and I've joked with some of my regulars that when I first bought the place, there was still tumbleweed rolling down Main Street. Honest, there were maybe 30 open storefronts when I bought this place.
Wow. So well, that's not that long in history.
That's not that long. The change has been just incredible.
So in the last 10 years?
Probably say the last 10 years has really been the big change, the big drive. A lot of new businesses, a lot of renovation. And it's not just young energy, but I would certainly say there's a lot of young entrepreneurs here that really have a vision and are really digging their feet in and not just, you know, a fly-by chance. They really care about the community.
They're invested. This is their home. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I can feel the palpable energy of people moving back to live in the urban core. Is that happening?
Oh, absolutely. And it's a beautiful thing. You know, there's a big drive for biking, you know, less cars on the streets, you know, be close to where you are, know who your neighbors are, be able to walk to where you're going. And we have just a wonderful setup for that in this town.
How about affordability? I mean, you have friends probably in San Francisco and whatnot. You know how some of the young people are just being choked out of any opportunity.
Absolutely. And there's several friends I know that left after college and, you know, went to Madison, Milwaukee, Chicago, even greater areas. And when they come back here, you know, cost of living is still incredibly reasonable. And what you get for that, besides just being affordable, you also get the luxury of the amazing scenery, the river, the bluffs. I mean, truly.
Right on the Mississippi.
We are so blessed. Yeah. Yes.
Okay, well, talk a little bit more about that resurgence. For example, do you own a house? Could a person like you, what would it cost to get into a house that you'd be proud of?
Yeah, I do own a home. I was fortunate to buy a home shortly after college. That was because I really wanted to be invested in this community, tired of renting. It definitely is possible. You know, with everything, though, there are ebbs and flows, and so right now everybody wants a house.
Prices are up.
They absolutely are.
So
but
what would it cost an entry-level house here?
For something decent, you're going to pay $160,000 minimum for something decent.
That gets you a carport in California.
Yeah. I know. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah. How about you as a business person? It's accessible. It's not going to choke somebody. You can step up to the plate and create a business.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's a lot going on here, but competition is good. I do feel you should love your competitor, and that will teach you what to do right or maybe what you're doing wrong. Free market's a wonderful thing. Let's keep it rocking. You know, this is great.
So what do you have here? What is the draw? Is it primarily coffee and what else?
Yes, coffee definitely. Our breakfast sandwiches are a huge draw. People are still learning that we have beer and wine with our patio, so that's a big thing. But most definitely for us, location is incredibly huge. And having the outdoor seating, you know, the ambiance of the inside, you know, coffee's the main piece.
I find it fascinating that when you stepped up to the plate to jump in here, you didn't know anything about
coffee or running a retail business, it didn't scare you that much?
Oh, it definitely scared me, but I tried not to show it. Fake it till you make it. Truly, I had a college degree, but my own staff had to show me how to brew coffee when I bought the place. And I knew I didn't know a lot, but now looking back, I really didn't know anything, you know?
You didn't know.
I didn't know. Exactly.
Tell me a couple stories about your friend, somebody else downtown that's parallel doing something, taking a risk and jumping in.
I'm looking across the street at Dublin Square, and Matt Boschka is a good friend of mine and a wonderful businessman. He renovated that place right about when I bought the place here. I think Dublin Square is right about 7 or 8 years old.
And what is it?
It is an Irish pub and grill. They have a nice small little patio outside. They have wonderful food, a great bar selection. They run a clean, good business. They have great employees. And it's been wonderful to see that because Matt is also a Rotarian. I and Matt are both in the Downtown Rotary Club, so it's been really wonderful to see another young person that's not only invested in their business and doing the right thing, but also, you know, involved in the community. And his growth has been wonderful. Since Dublin Square, they've opened up Burger Fusion, which has a downtown location and in the mall. He opened another restaurant in Onalaska and is helping to grow the downtown there, as well as investing into a golf course. So, you know, it's just been awesome to see all the growth and the energy and just the wonderful things that are coming out of that.
A lot of the towns that I visit around America, around the Midwest, there's like a couple like you that will start businesses, and then you open the gates.
Yes.
And then other people feel safer to take the risk. Is that happening?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. And, you know, in a sense, they're your competition, but in a sense, you know, they're your supporters, too. I know if I have questions, I can go and talk to Matt and say, how are you doing this? You know, they're friends. It's wonderful.
That's cool. All right. Well, only because we got to go, got to say thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you very much. This was wonderful.
Yeah, and for somebody wanted to find out more about you, do you have a website?
Absolutely. Yeah, the number one way to find out what's going on is definitely to follow our Facebook page. We're Grounded Specialty Coffee, and our website is groundedlacrosse.com. So we try to keep, you know, all of our events and everything going on there. So,
well-grounded, Maria. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much. I appreciate it, Tom.
My pleasure.
The Genoa National Fish Hatchery. Project leader Doug Aloisi.
I'm the hatchery manager at the Genoa National Fish Hatchery.
Genoa Fish Hatchery has been part of Wisconsin history for close to 100 years.
Since 1932 we've been around.
Why did it start? What was the reason?
The reason was the passage of the Upper Mississippi Wildlife and Fish Act of 1924, and that allowed the federal government to begin acquiring some lands along the east and west banks of the Mississippi to make one of the largest refuges in the refuge system currently in the lower 48 states.
There are quite a few Fish and Wildlife Service fish hatcheries around America, aren't there?
There sure are. Almost every state has them, but there's roughly 70-plus federal fish hatcheries in the system.
Right here at the hatchery, there's an interpretive center that's open to the public. Tell us about that and what somebody would find here.
We were always dreaming that we could have a place where would serve the community and to not only help to learn more about us and our roots and where we came from, but also to help in some of the environmental education programs in some of the local schools, be able to interpret what we do here as well as what happened here even over 150 years ago at some of the early pioneering events as Wisconsin was settled.
You mentioned schools. Like walking through imagining that this is a great place for school field trips.
It sure is. We try to use the whole landmass here to try to educate the kids, and especially we have an area that's a 35-acre wetland that we use as an outdoor classroom. We try to teach the kids about the values of saving our wetlands for nursery areas, for fish, and for also filtering areas to clean up our water.
By having an actual example of a wetland, is it an obvious teaching tool that the kids get? Do they understand by seeing it?
They sure do, and it's an opportunity, too, to get them outside and into nature as well to try to grow their appreciation for nature and try to conserve some of the open areas as the country grows more and more to just show the importance of conservation in our wetlands as well.
What sort of species do you hatch here, and what's the
end game for that?
We have roughly 15 species of fish on hand at any time, and about 15 species of mussels, and an aquatic insect that's on the endangered species list, as well as a species of salamander that mussels use to complete their life cycle. So it's really a wide variety of species, and it's a lot of fun to work here.
You propagate dragonflies?
Yes, it's a new program that we're trying to maintain the Heinz Emerald Dragonfly, which is its essential habitat areas is almost right in the middle of Chicago, and there's roughly only about 150 to 300 individuals left. We're trying to make sure that that genetic population doesn't be exterminated.
And how is the outcome so far? Prospects?
It's going good. The University of South Dakota developed propagation methods in the laboratory, and we're trying to apply them on a production scale at our facility in our outdoor pond. So it's a learning experience every day, but I think last year we were able to put out over 40 individuals, which would be almost a third of the population.
Amazing. So real critical, isn't it?
You bet. Yeah.
And is any way to track and to monitor?
They do have ways to assess the population. They go out at certain times of year to find the breeding females, and they do counts that way to take a survey.
Maybe they stick on little mini GPS devices.
That's probably coming.
Yeah, for sure. Another thing, a friend of mine told me that you guys hatch river sturgeon. Is that true?
Yes, we're raising about 5 different river strains of lake sturgeon.
Lake sturgeon, not river sturgeon. Right,
right. Yeah. But they actually live in both.
So, okay, all right.
Some people, to distinguish them, call them rock sturgeons. And we have 2 species out in the river here. One is called a sand sturgeon, which is the shovel-nose sturgeon. It's more brownish, and then lake sturgeon is more gray, like a rock.
They have to be one of the most prehistoric-looking fish that you've ever seen.
They sure are, that and the paddlefish as well. I had the opportunity to raise both species, so they were really neat species to raise. It's been very fun to learn how to raise them.
And a Fish and Wildlife Service was telling me a few days ago that one of the reasons for you guys doing the sturgeon program has to do with dams where they can't get upstream.
Exactly. Part of their life cycle is to migrate up to freshwater rivers, and over big rock and cobble they'll lay their eggs, and they have sticky eggs, and so they need flowing water and that type of habitat, and when you build dams they can't get upstream to those habitats.
And how many sturgeon do you propagate per year, and in the monitoring of success or failure of that program?
We raise around 80 to 120,000 sturgeon a year here now at Genoa, and we tag those fish, so it's quite a process to tag each one of those fingerlings before release, and then they're monitored out by management biologists as they grow older and larger and susceptible to their nets.
And so the tagging remains on them into maturity?
Yes. Yep. They'll live their whole lives with a little piece of wire called a micro tag that's has a code on it, so they can distinguish what lot they came from.
But it's not a tag that a fisherman would know or be instructed to advise Fish and Wildlife?
No, because those tags are quite a bit too small.
Yeah.
No, they're more labor intensive, so that we would be there for next year.
Yeah.
But those micro tags, they have actually a metal detector, a wand that they put over the fish, and it'll detect that little tag.
Kind of like the ones they inject into dogs and cats.
Somewhat. That's a pit tag, though. They're able to actually distinguish what animal. We can get to the lot, but
not to the individual. Anything else that you want to share? Because I don't know the secrets. I just rolled in here.
Well, we just wanted to share some of our conservation message with the public, and we got a chance to do that with our new building. And we also have partners that are somewhat interested in telling the historic story of our region, too. And we had the opportunity to work with the Scenic Byways Commission to do that. So we're pretty blessed in both areas.
And the Great River Road, that's a destination in itself.
It sure is. So if you haven't been here yet, come on down to Genoa and check us out. My name's Doug Aloisi. I'm the hatchery manager at Genoa, and further information is on our Facebook page under the Genoa National Fish Hatchery.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Tom. It was fun.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com. Our associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, Elaine Masters in San Diego, Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon, and Steve Cook, contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of ArkanSongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org. Once again, svdpusa.org. And whether you're shopping for new or used items, donating them, or volunteering, you're helping the Society of St. Vincent de Paul help others.